honored that the first person you might hear on this show might not be me and Christian. It might be this voice.
Yes, here, Giovanni Savarez.
Yeah, well, I was about to say your name, but you saw Gio Savarez.
Of MLS on Apple TV. We're going to preview the season with Gio. And in the second segment, we're talking about what the hell happened in Champions League with Benfica and Real Madrid. It is it happens too much. Why do we have to keep talking about this? And we'll talk about the rest of Champions League because there was a wild last 2 days in Champions League. So all this and more today on The Cooligans.
Talking to my wife, she was on the phone with someone and she was like, oh, what time are you getting to work? And she's like, oh, it's kind of late. And she's like, oh yeah, but that's what you do for a living. And I was like, what? You got a friend who's like nursing late now? You know what I mean? I didn't know. You know, sometimes that happens, right? Mm-hmm. You have to late shift. And she said, no, her friend's a stripper.
Got it.
And I was like, oh, I didn't know we had these types of friends.
Are we allowed to make these kinds of friends?
It's crazy because if I had one, but I was like, oh, that's cool. Like, I could care less, right? Hey, work is work. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I'm one of these people that's an entrepreneur. You know what I mean?
Sure.
You got assets. You know what I mean? There's supply. You got supply and there's clearly demand. But I was like, yo, that's wild. Like, I didn't know you knew a stripper. She's like, oh, she just became a stripper not that long ago. She's actually like a professor. It's I think in like classical music, right? And damn, then she became a stripper because she started working as a bartender because it's like really hard. She wasn't getting whatever. I don't know how professors work. She wasn't getting enough spots at the club. I don't know how this works.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, she needed more money, basically. So she became a bartender and she realized how much money the strippers were making.
Yeah.
And you know, when you're a bartender or a waitress at a strip club, you get propositioned a lot the same way a stripper would.
Yeah, I would imagine.
Anyway, long story short, she becomes a stripper. And I was like, yeah, that's crazy to go from like being a professor to stripping. It's such a juxtaposition. Mm-hmm. I was like, I wonder what made her like cool with that life. You know what I mean? She said, most of the guys, she said she has like regulars, right? Who come in for the same dances or whatever.
Uh-huh.
She doesn't do any of the extras. Sometimes there's extras that happen at the strip club.
I've heard.
Yeah. I don't know. And you're like, what do you mean? Yu-Gi-Oh? No, Christian. Sex stuff. But she says she doesn't do that. But she says sometimes guys will pay her to do like girlfriend stuff, like go out. Like regular.
Oh, the girlfriend, GFE.
Yeah, okay.
Girlfriend experience.
And she goes, one guy pays her a lot of money. I don't know what it is. I think my wife's not cool asking. But to just go golfing.
Damn.
With the guy.
You don't got any bros?
And I was like, yo, find out how much it is. I'll charge half. If you ain't doing any wild stuff, you know what I mean?
Alexa's like, I'll be funnier than the stripper. Yo, I promise that.
I got bits. I'm down to drink. And honestly, you want to get a squeeze, buddy? Half of me feels like a titty anyway.
You'll get a little bit more access than her.
I'm just saying. Bro, how much you getting paid? I think she said it's about $1,000 like for like an hour or something.
I mean, this just highlights where capitalism is taking us, where our professors are like, nah, I gotta go shake
some
ass.
Don't make this nerdy, dude.
She is a nerd.
Don't make this nerdy, dog.
It's a little bit sad. I mean, you would.
Is it? Hold on. I disagree that it's sad. I think.
It's not sad that she is a stripper. It's sad that she cannot pursue her true passion of being a professor because of the financial issues.
What if the financial issues in her job as a professor made her realize she could pursue her true passion, which is getting paid like five racks to go golfing.
You think she wants to golf with some dude that is suffering from the male loneliness epidemic, bro? It's
Can I just say she's probably saving lives?
Possibly. But is that the work she wants to be doing?
If you got five racks and nobody to talk to.
And a rack.
You know what I mean? No, if you need five racks and you got a rack, I think that's perfect.
I don't know if it's.
I wonder if the AI transcription service we use is going to think we're talking about Iraq versus Iraq.
I'm just saying, you know, if the rent was cheaper, maybe this isn't the path she would have.
You don't know
been
that.
Forced
you
to
don't
go.
Know that.
I don't know that.
I think you're judging.
I'm literally not judging. I'm just saying.
I think you're judging Shorty.
She worked so hard to become a professor.
Let me tell you something. I can afford my rent. I want to go golfing for money. And I'll wear something tight. You know what I mean?
I mean, look, do I think she's not enjoying her work? No, I'm not saying
Here's
that.
Here's where I draw the line. I won't wear those leggings that go up your butt crack. You know what I'm talking about? There's two types of leggings.
The TikTok leggings.
There's a whole ass. There's a whole ass. And then there's the double cheek.
Yeah.
I'm not wearing double cheek.
Okay.
But well, I throw on some whole ass leggings.
I didn't realize you were so conservative.
You know what? I'm not a piece of meat.
Well, capitalism.
I'll even lose at golfing.
All right. Best of luck in whatever profession she wants to work in.
What about me? Best of luck to me. I'm finding some sad sack who wants to pay me.
I mean, you have a platform. You could.
I'm putting it out there right now, dog. You know? Proposition me.
Okay. Yes, I'd love to see that vlog.
And by the way, I'll listen to your corny stories, but only for the length of a song.
Okay.
just like a stripper. Yeah.
Okay. You gotta put some money in his Fruit of the Loom.
100%.
If you want to listen to more.
You took a hundo in my Mac Weldons? I'll listen to your corny ass story.
All right.
You think Mac Weldon's like, yeah, that's the promo we need right there.
they're like, we're not even sponsoring, but please stop talking about us.
Yeah, we'll pay you to never mention us.
All right, right. Welcome to the Cooligans. My name is Christian Polanco.
Hey, I'm Alexis Guerreros.
Excited about today's show because we are joined by the one and only, a little bit later, we'll be joined by Gio Savarese.
Yeah.
We're putting Gio Savarese on the spot. Gio is here with his official MLS 2026 picks, MVP, best signing, conference favorite, but the one that shocked us, the club he thinks is in real danger of falling off this season. Well, you're not going to get relegated, I know that, but we'll see how poor they might be.
Not making the playoffs is what
So you kind of want to hear this. All right, Gio, let's just get started before we get into too many pleasantries.
This is the top topic.
Who's going to be the MLS MVP in 2026?
I mean, you have to say always Messi. I mean, that's the first name that has to come.
Bold. Brave. Yeah. This is why we bring you on. To give the takes nobody else will.
Profe Savarese is willing to say the things no one else is. But I think you're right. There's really no other option.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. All right. And then best off-season signing. All right. Let's get to some. These might be a little bit more obscure. So who do you think is the best off-season signing?
I think Bertrame. Is definitely for me a tremendous signing.
The striker for Inter Miami. Coming from Monterrey.
Monterrey. Correct. Great forward. We had the pleasure to play against Monterrey when he played against us. I saw the quality that he has. He's a complete player. I think he's going to be very, very good for Inter Miami. Portland at some point tried to bring him in. They couldn't. But now I think it's going to be very good for this stronger Inter Miami.
All right. But this is, I don't know if you know the saying, this is the kind of greed you hear about in the Bible. I don't know if you've heard that saying before, but how does Inter Miami, I mean, look, a lot of people have had the conversation about Inter Miami getting out all these great players. But when you make sort of sense of it, and I listen to like Tom Bolger and he can address every single signing and how they keep it under the cap or whatever. But as a coach, when you see that they get so many players, do you think anything? You're just like, this is it. Is it unfair? Is it frustrating? How did they manage to figure out the cap?
Forget all that. Where are they even getting all these international slots?
Yes. I mean, no, listen, in MLS, you can buy international slots. Right. So, it's always possible. Anything is possible. As a coach, you always want to have the best players. So you're going to go to the sporting director and push them as much as you can to bring you good players. And if they're able to do so, then you're happier, of course. Right. There's a little more pressure because now you have a better team. But that's, the scenario that you want to have as a coach if you want to compete.
Right. I think it's pretty clear that as far as breaking any rules, it doesn't look like Inter Miami is doing that. But I'm curious, as a coach, if you had a player like Messi on your team, it would obviously make it easier to get other players on your team. Is just that little, and there's not little, but is that aspect of it, is it like almost an envy of just even getting under the cap, the fact that you have a player that people want to play with and they will probably take less money to play with a player like that?
Wouldn't that be the first thing you said if you call a player? Do you want to play with Messi?
No, I will first ask Messi.
That's a great point.
I'm not gonna go first to the player. I go to Messi first, and I go, Messi, do you think that this is a guy that you can play with? You know, this type of players, I mean, specifically that type of player, which is very unique. You have to understand that they have to be in the conversation. You have to speak to them. You have to make sure that they know who are the players that are coming in, and they have to somehow agree as well to play with them. And then you go, who doesn't want to play with Messi? I've been basically thinking whoever you're going to go and talk to is going to want to play with Messi. So I think it's those things that you have to go to your player and say, Messi, do you want this player? You think he can help? And have that conversation. And at the end, if you can get it, you're going to be a stronger team.
What a great point. Right. Even if the guy's in the room, I'd be like, Messi, you like this guy?
I'm literally shoving the sporting director in his face and being like, yo, Messi, what do you think?
I'm sure the sporting director does the same thing.
Take two sips of your mate. If it's a yes, one sip of your mate. If it's a no.
All right. Okay. A team in danger of falling off.
So this doesn't necessarily mean falling off in the sense of having a bad season. Just not reaching the heights of last
season. Exactly. And that was my point. I think Vancouver, as crazy as it is, it's just because what they have done this past season was incredible. It was the highest they ever done. They've ever been. They got to the final. Yes, the contender to try to win the MLS Cup, but the Champion League, Champion Cup, every competition that they participate, the way they play, the players, how much they give to the team. It was an unbelievable season for them. I mean, I enjoy watching them the entire season. I'm just saying sustaining what they did this past year is going to be very difficult. So I don't see them doing the same. I think they're going to go a little bit down. They tie, I think, yesterday, 0-0.
In
Champions Cup. So I do see a side of them that they're not going to be able to keep the standard of last year. And that's why I think it will be one of those teams that it will qualify, it will compete, but I don't see them doing the same thing of 2025.
They obviously sold or traded Jaden Nelson to Austin because I know he wanted to get more minutes. And they sold another player, another striker. Sabi? Was Sabi sold or he's still there?
I think he's still there.
I think he might be still be there. But so, yeah, I can understand. They're probably not going to miss the playoffs, but they'll probably won't be as high.
To me, last season, as much as I enjoyed the final, to me, LAFC versus Vancouver was the highlight match for me. That semifinal was absolutely out of this world.
Oh, it was incredible.
If that happens again, I have a feeling it goes the other way. I think LAFC.
I think so. I think LAFC is a better team this year as well. I think they made a signing that was very smart, intelligent. Mm. I think it was Eusequio.
Eustáquio. Portuguese. Canadian guy from
he's a phenomenal Porto. player.
Great.
So he's very smart. I saw him playing when he was in Canada in the NASL. So we had the chance to be able to play against him. He was very young, 18-19 years old at that time.
What was he?
Edmonton. He was in Edmonton. And already there you can tell that he's not a flashy player, but very smart. Tactically, he knows where to be. And for this team, I think he's going to be a tremendous player. And also he's very well connected with Dos Santos because he's Canadian, he's Portuguese. So I think it was a phenomenal signing for, and we saw already in the last game that they played, I think they won 6-1. And he was already moving the team, in the right direction.
Amazing. And that is your Western Conference favorite. We have LAFC, Eastern Conference favorite. How about we go there?
Exactly.
How about Eastern Conference?
Inter Miami.
Okay.
I mean, yes, obviously. Right?
Inter Miami. I don't know how much we need.
They've only gotten better. It's crazy.
I don't know how much we need to qualify it.
Although Busquets is going to be a big miss for them.
Yeah.
And Alba.
Huge.
And Alba. Yeah.
100%. They do have a young player. I'm not comparing Busquets with this player, but Ayala, I think, is a very good player. I think he's going to do very well this season.
Busquets is unique.
He's one of the best players in playing that position, if not the best. Yeah. So it's going to be very difficult to replace. But Ayala, I think, is going to have a very important role in this team. And I see a more complete team this year.
Okay.
I can see it.
I mean, I'm curious, just talking about Busquets, have you ever, I don't know if necessarily played, when I'm playing like pickup and I'm at a very low level and somebody is like that kind of person where like they don't even really move, but I there's no way I'm getting the ball. Like, is there anybody similar that you've either played against or that reminds you of like the ability of a Busquets, of just like a player that doesn't necessarily need to be the most athletically gifted,
like,
but
wily.
they can run the pitch.
Yeah, I was very fortunate to play, you know, with the national team. So we played South America with basically every national team. So yeah. I had a chance to play with big time players. So yes, but I would say coaching wise, one that I would put similar was Raul. Raul, sometimes you wouldn't see where he was,
okay,
and he will appear. He just read the same as Busquets. Busquets in a different way because he's a defensive mid, mm-hmm. and he created the game. He linked the attack with the defense. Raul was just a way to find the right spot to score goals, and he saw things. Three times before everybody else saw it. And
if you're wondering what Raul he's talking about, the one from the Galacticos.
Yeah, that Raul. Yeah.
That Raul, bro. That's crazy. I forget what happened in that era of Cosmos sometimes. Yeah. You had Senna, Raul.
Juan Arango, which, you know, it was another tremendous player. We had the fortune to have some very good players.
Yeah, dude, imagine coaching Raul, bro. That's crazy.
Okay. We got newcomer of the year, and we'll bring up again, obviously, Germán Beterame from Monterrey for obvious reasons. Okay, how about 2026 Dark Horse? Who do you think might kind of surprise us this season?
Yeah, I was thinking, I think there's some teams that are going to be better this year. I really believe that Toronto is going to get better. If they get Sargent, which it seems that is going to be very difficult. I don't know if it's already close.
Right, right. There's a lot of drama there with this club. Yeah.
A lot of drama, but I do think that they are looking to make, you know, mm-hmm. more signings, to invest a little bit more. They have Robin Fraser, which, you know, he knows the league. I think Montreal is going to be a better team this year as well. So
I hope so, man. What a great fan base for them to have sort of had the situation that they've had for the past.
Yeah, I don't know about the city and the ownership. I don't know how, you know, the relationship, and sometimes, you know, that brings down some of the, you know, possibilities. But I do see in the coach, Donadel Marco, mm-hmm. I know him very well. He was in Fiorentina coaching the second team. And I see him making this team a better team. So I will see improvements
in
this
team. If I'm
not
mistaken, he also comes from the Wilfred Nancy tree, correct?
No, he came directly from Italy.
Oh, did he?
He played for Montreal.
Okay.
You know, so yeah. And he played, you know, in Serie A. So it's I think he's a good coach. And I do think he's going to bring Montreal to be a little bit more competitive this year.
Very okay. Nice. I hope so. Great kit this year.
Atlanta, of course. I mean, Tata. Yeah. Tata's back. you know, and everybody's excited in Atlanta. I think also they can do worse than what they did last year.
That was I can't what even understand how it got that bad.
We were there in 2018, and it was like Atlanta's now the king of soccer.
Sure.
You know, this is like the city to go to, the mecca of soccer, and all of a sudden it just all capitulated.
I think the management did everything possible to make that team successful. I think they tried to bring players. You know, a mid-season they actually I think made like five changes. They brought mm-hmm. very good players. They made big investment. I just think that sometimes when something doesn't connect, it's not going to happen. I mean, you could be the most tactical coach. You can know, you know, everything about the game. But if there's no connection internally, players and coaching staff and all that, and it looked all the time during the season that connection was never made. They struggled to win games away. They just all of a sudden won a game and then they look very different the next game. So they're definitely going to be a much better team. And with Tata there, with his coaching group and the new players, you know, I think this year they're going to be much, much better. They're going to compete in a better way.
Yeah.
Tata and Miggy and Miron back together. Bro.
I know. Atlanta, see, almost feels a little bit like the way Premier League clubs like get rid of their managers after eight games because they don't win enough. But it's like the standard is high. But I say that to say that, you know, to me, there's like a few clubs that have the supporter culture and passion that is just like really like it's just for an MLS team. It's just like it's fairly rare for it to be that consistent. You know, Portland is another one where mm-hmm. if you're not performing well enough, the fans will let you know.
But it's still, you know, and as a coach, you know, you want to have the support of the club and stay as much as you can. I was very fortunate to stay almost 6 years in Portland because it's a good mentality to give the opportunity. But also the fact that there's no promotion relegation gives you the possibility
to
be able to stay a little bit longer, because in Europe it's different. You know, we see Wilfred Nancy, happened.
Exactly.
Very difficult. Great coach. But things didn't work out the right way at that particular time. And they made a decision, a quick decision. It's just because, you know, it's just different in the way promotion relegation.
I think there was a mutiny with Wilfred Nanti I was watching those Celtic games. I'm like, this is not even the same team that was playing a couple weeks ago. How could they? They were missing sitters. Great chances.
I think he went into it not to, because I think Wilfred Nanti is an incredible coach, and to me was my favorite coach in MLS when he was here. But I think he went into it thinking, I can make a culture change in the style of play and mentality. And that takes time.
In the winter, that's hard.
No, but you just don't have time. You don't have time in Europe, especially a club like Celtic. Had he gone to, Hearts is at the top of the league. So maybe had he gone to like an Aberdeen or something where they're like, all right, we want you to sort of reshape the club. Celtic's like, we don't want you to reshape. You know, that's their Real Madrid. That's their Barcelona. They're like, no, we want you to come in and win for us. And you have to go in with those types of tactics.
But I do think that it happens sometimes to very good coaches, excellent coaches, you know, as him. You know, we see Xabi Alonso, similar situation with the players.
Ridiculous.
We see Mota when he went to Juventus. Uh-huh. He did really well with Bologna. And it happens sometimes, you know, it's this moment in which you have to make a decision to your style of play and catering a little bit to what you have as players.
Right.
And the location that you coach in matters, and the competition that you coach might be different than where you were before.
Yeah.
So I think sometimes when you want to stick with something, it's a good thing. But when that, you know, situation doesn't get you to the next level or makes a change to win games, then you have to change. And I think that's sometimes the breaking point from some coaches from, you know, being successful and not being successful for the way I look at it.
And Ruben Amorim is another great example. You could stick to your guns, but then he switches to a four at the back, and next thing you know, he's like sacked. It's like you either do it early and you show that flexibility, or you just ride it out and say, yo, this is my system.
And it's tough because you're talking about, I mean, the coaches that we just mentioned, they're top coaches.
These are all great coaches.
Very great coaches.
Likeable. Would be at Juve for years.
Yeah, likeable coaches. Great, you know, the people that can connect. But sometimes I think, you know, this is something that maybe, you know, they need to understand a little bit better. And that's why coaches like Ancelotti sometimes, wherever they go, they're successful. Yeah, maybe not in Everton when he was there. It was a little bit more difficult. But everywhere else, I think, you know, he's done a phenomenal job. And he's having a great time in Brazil.
Yeah,
he's really hanging out, having a good time. It's a little too good of a time. Who knows?
A little off topic, but Pellegrino Matarazzo at Real Sociedad. I mean, it's to see an American getting that opportunity. Obviously, he's had a fascinating kind of like career. But just your thoughts on the fact his first loss against Real Madrid, but 9 games unbeaten. I don't know if you know him personally, but what do you think of his performance there so far?
I don't know him personally. Mm-hmm. But I have followed him for many, many years. I've seen him, you know, when he was Stuttgart, in Germany. And I mean, he's a phenomenal coach. I watched the games, very smart. I mean, you know, he's a math graduate from Columbia University.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, there's a lot to understand there. And
Ancelotti said he's willing to graduate from Colombia. He likes a party.
But Matarazzo is a great coach. You know, he was from here in New Jersey. He's from New Jersey. Mm-hmm. And his team are always fun to watch, you know, and the competitive. And going to Real Sociedad. Real Sociedad is a great community. You know, the people that don't understand the team, the Basque, they're very attached to it. I think at a particular time, they couldn't have, I don't know if it's the same, but they couldn't have any other player that wasn't Basque or Spain or from Spain.
Yeah, like Chivas.
Yeah, exactly. Basically. You know,
like Atletico Bilbao as well.
Exactly. Bilbao. Same. The same. So he arrived to this club, and as you said, he's been winning. So he's been phenomenal.
Yeah.
One of the things I love about you is that you sort of keep track of all these things that are happening, and you look at it from a coach's point of view. You're very tactical. Recently, The Athletic released a list of the 30 best teams of all time in MLS. And I just assumed Inter Miami is going to be at the top, right? You got Messi, you got Busquets, you got Alba, you got Suarez. They're going to be at the top. but they didn't win. 2017 Toronto finished above them.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember that 2017
of
team?
Of course.
And would you place them above Miami?
Possibly. I mean, they had a great coach, Greg Vanney. Yeah. I think he was very successful during his time in Toronto. He changed the club. Because, you know, they were changing coaches, wasn't working. He came in and you know, I know players like the way he manages the teams. I play against him. I know how he thinks. And that team was phenomenal. They had some players that just, you know, I remember the final against Chivas USA. What a final. You know, so that was an unbelievable team. And it was packed all over the field. Yeah. I think they played three in the back that year, if I remember correctly. And they had the Italian player, Giovinco. Everything that was around the area, and if we kick, it would be a goal.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a phenomenal team.
Yeah.
But above Miami.
So, I mean, they Toronto previously had the points record until Inter Miami broke it. I believe that that was the case. But that 2017 team, especially with Giovinco, I forgot what his stats individually that season were. But they were...
Michael Bradley was there.
Josie.
Josie was incredible in that team. So I think they had a phenomenal group at that particular time. And I can see, because we always, when we think Inter Miami, we go right away to Messi. And it's very difficult to compete against, you know, just that name, Messi.
Yeah.
But that Toronto team was very, very good. And sure. I think that through these years, you know, the Galaxy, the team that, you know, won so many continues. Yeah. So I think we've seen some very good teams in MLS.
Yeah. I mean, that we were at the 2016 MLS Cup final. That was the first MLS Cup final we both went to. And
when Stephen Fry had that crazy save.
Roman Torres won in penalties for Seattle. But that game ended, it was 0-0 and ended in penalties. But realistically, huge upset for Toronto, right? Like that was a game they should have won at home, especially.
But it wasn't different Inter Miami Vancouver.
Okay.
I mean, it's not to that level because, you know, there were more shots made by both teams because back in that game, I think Seattle didn't have that many shots on goal.
I believe there were no shots on goal.
Exactly. I remember no shots on goal, and then all of a sudden they ended up winning that match. Vancouver deserve, I think, you know, if you look at the stats and all that.
Yeah.
But on the other side, that team had Messi, he made just two, three different moments and he changed the game.
Exactly.
So we had those conversations. We talked to Troy Deeney and I was like, let's say you're a striker, right? I was like, let's say you play 89 minutes where you're stinking it up. You're missing balls. You're not making the right runs, not in the channels. But then you score a goal in the 90th minute and that's the winner. Did you have a good game? And he's like, yeah. That's you asked me to score a goal. You give me 90 minutes to win the game. It doesn't matter if I stunk for 89. If I had that one moment of brilliance and that wins the game, I had a good
game. You know the saying, you know, finals are to be win. Yeah. You know, not to play nice soccer.
Exactly.
Of course, if you can, you know, add that to it. But at the end, the most important thing is to win and lift the trophy.
Yeah. It's like Messi's. Oh, he's getting older. He's getting this. Who cares if he gives you one moment of brilliance and that wins the game? Good enough for me.
Okay. Since I just mentioned Seattle, I'm just curious out of, because I've never had this conversation with you, but the rivalry between Portland Timbers and Seattle Sounders is one that it's fantastic. It's super fun.
The Cascadia region.
As a neutral, it's fun.
It's incredible. As a coach,
I'm curious what it was like.
It's the best. I mean, very fortunate as a person to have been able to coach Portland Timbers because of the culture of the city, because of the team, the type of players that we had, and because of that rivalry, you know, especially with Seattle going and playing against them. And the way they look at you, the Seattle, you know, fans and the competition, it was beautiful. With Brian, I had always a great relationship.
Yeah.
So it was always tough.
Nicest guys in the league.
Nicest guy, exactly. So, you know, we had always a good, you know, communication and all that. But the moment that, the whistle was played, it was competition. And those games, I didn't even have to talk to the players sometimes. They were pump already themselves
right.
because they will explain to the other players how important this game was and they were always unbelievable matches.
Anything that comes to mind if I ask you like best derby memory and worst derby memory
Oh, of course, easy for me. I start with the worst when we lost 6-2 at home.
I mean
that was I think they shot they had four shots to our goal and they score six goals. Right. I don't know how they can.
Balls going around.
We play well. Yeah. We play well that game and we lost 6-2. So you can imagine.
Yeah.
Everything was perfect for them. And I will say for me, the most amazing moment is when we beat them in PKs and we ended up going, you know, after to play the semifinals with Kansas City. But that was in PKs. It was a great feeling in 2018 to be able to beat them and pass the round.
Amazing.
I also want to ask, and we can cut this out if you're not allowed to talk about it, but the Cascadia Cup for me is one of the highlights of the secondary competitions that you get, like, you know, the Canada Championship and all that. There's some really cool stuff. Cascadia Cup, there's a potential that it'll just be two teams, right? Vancouver may have to move. Mm-hmm. I think for me and for the fans there, I hope they get to stay. Can you talk about what part? Because we always talk about Seattle versus Portland. What about the Vancouver part of that rivalry?
No, listen, I have to say, I think Vancouver feels it more than Seattle and Portland.
Okay.
So I think is they are part 100% of this rivalry.
Mm-hmm.
They are, you know, is historical and they're always, you know, important games. But I believe that the feeling is more Seattle-Portland. And when Vancouver plays against those other teams, I think Vancouver feels it more than the other two teams.
Yeah, gotcha. Yeah.
Okay.
Hopefully they can stay.
Yeah, I'm hoping that
too. Cascadia is not the same if you're in Vegas or wherever.
Okay. I want to talk some USMNT and just look towards the World Cup, because obviously there's several MLS players that have a really good chance of being at the World Cup. But one of them is Diego Luna. And he is a player the last few years, especially 2 years, that you can, especially when he rejected going to the Olympics, or I think, was it the Olympics? Or he didn't want to be a reserve mm-hmm. at the Olympics. And he was just like, no, I'm just going to stay with my club. We're sort of thinking like that he could have a real role and real influence with the national team, possibly at this World Cup. Maybe, is he someone that you think should make a move and test himself out in Europe? Or just somewhere, just at a higher level, because it feels like the demands of the national team are kind of asking for that.
I think Diego Luna is a great player. He's that type of player that will sacrifice himself for the team, mm-hmm. which is what you want. I mean, we've seen what he's done for the national team, for RSL. If you think that he's going to be your best player, I think you have to worry about a national team. I don't think yet to be the player to carry a national team on mm-hmm. his shoulders. Mm-hmm. So he's a guy that I think maybe this year has to prove a little bit more in MLS and then maybe has the opportunity to go overseas, because he has the talent. I think he will succeed going overseas, but I do think he needs one more year. And I do think that with the national team and in the World Cup, he's going to do well. But as I said, if we are thinking that he's going to be the main person, then I do think that we're in trouble as a national team.
Do you think sometimes, because I feel like he's a prototypical American player in the sense that like he leaves it all on the pitch, and I'm not saying other 100%. Nations don't do that, mm-hmm. but he has that. Sometimes those are intangibles though. You got to create a highlight reel to show it, because there's no stat that shows like heart. You know what I mean? Mm. Do you think players like that get opportunities, get looked at by clubs outside the US? Do you think they rate that well? Like, is a player like Diego Luna someone, as an example, someone you have to like sell to a European team and be like, no, he's great, he's this and that? Or do you think other clubs, whether it's Mexican, European, they kind of understand it, they see it and they kind of know what they get?
So first of all, from Pochettino's standpoint, I think he's happy, you know, because he values those type of players.
Yes, absolutely.
So and the second thing is, what I will say is that if you are a scout and you're watching a player and you see a really talented player that is better than that player that has, you know, desire and is proud on the field and works hard, but that other player doesn't have that desire, you go with this player more, because I think mentality, work ethic beats all the time a player that is talented, but not has, you know, that mentality. So I do think that Luna has the possibility to be able to go and have a successful career outside MLS.
Okay.
You mentioned Pochettino, someone who obviously rates him and thinks highly of someone who sticks like that. What are your thoughts on sort of where Pochettino is sort of got the national team and heading into the World Cup? How confident are you, someone from a coaching perspective? Because I think a lot of times we look at it from different eyes, right? You from a coaching perspective, are you sort of liking what you're seeing?
Yeah, I do. I'm sure that we're going to be a better team and a better national team because we have him. He's an experienced coach. He knows what he's looking for. I think he arrived with the thought that he was going to find something different. And I think he's molded himself to try to change, to make things better. He had to fight a lot with some things. And I think now he's in a place that he feels more comfortable. He feels better. He feels that he has a good direction of what he wants to be. And I think we're going to be competing better with him than without him. I do think that a coach like Materazzo could have been also another one should have been taken in consideration. I'm not sure if he was part of the... Right. The list, but I do think, you know, Pochettino makes our national team a better national team.
The one thing I don't love with Pochettino the last few weeks is that he, especially with the Tottenham situation and then the coaching, they just fired their coach. He keeps sort of hinting that he might want to go back. It's just like, this is not the right time.
I didn't expect him to be here forever.
I do think that you have to look that that's a big possibility.
Yeah, of course.
The club is hinted it. I think he kind of said it. That doesn't mean that he's not going to take full, you know,
of course,
mentality to the World Cup and to do as best as he can with the national team. It's just he's planning also his future.
Okay.
You think we'll see him drinking an espresso out of a Tottenham cup?
But what the hell's going on over here?
I go, but, you know, when I look at the tactics around the national team, I'm really excited about the potential of playing three at the back. I've been saying it. I was a big fan of Austin Trusty. He's left-footed, center back, can play left back, can play at the left center back. I would love to see the team at a three at the back. What are your thoughts? When you see the makeup of what we have, the type of player we have, do you think that's too defensive? Are you excited about
no,
it? Three at the back in the World Cup.
Listen, three in the back, it depends who you're talking to. They might say, oh, it's too defensive. Or the people are going to say, oh, you are like, you know,
overloading,
really attacking.
The midfield. Yeah.
So it depends, you know, how you use it more than anything else. I do think it's a smart move because I do think that we have some good center backs, but not that good enough at the highest level to be able to say that we don't need an extra one. Mm-hmm. So having three will be good to be more stable. But what we do have very, very good is fullbacks, wingbacks. Yeah. And we are probably one of the best in the world in getting wingbacks. And we see that, you know, in the league, those players go to Europe. So we can be a huge threat. We have athletes that can go back and forth, defense, help defend, but also go into attack. And that, I think, is huge, you know, for the way probably Pochettino wants to play. And now what we have to figure out is, you know, who are going to be the guys on the attack? Because as you were, you know, Weston McKennie, he's been playing strikers. Is he going to play striker? So, you know, so that's for him. But I think three is a smart move. You know, if it fits for what he's looking for, I think it's a very good decision.
I could see Tim Weah playing that right wing back.
I can't. I don't know. I don't love it. I mean, I think he's a better winger. I'm also slightly concerned about, like, I think Alex Freeman is great defensively. And he did score two goals in, you know, recently. But I'm like going forward, I don't love his control and like just control of the game.
What if he's
going forward?
What if he's the right center back? Chris Richards is the center back. And then pick your choice for
Trusty
left
as the left center back.
You know how happy I'd be about that. Yeah, a lot of people would owe me money if that happens. But no, I mean you have a choice of other Mark McKenzie. There's a lot of options.
Yeah,
on who can play.
I mean,
that
I think
it's
you know, Jedi Robinson, whether that's left wing.
That's
back.
That's left wing back.
And then I would still stick with Serginho Dest as right wing back, and then maybe
well,
Alex
Pochettino do that though. I don't know.
Yeah, but I do think also because it's going to be game to game because maybe a game he's going to want to have a more of a fullback defensive mentality player because he wants to just cover a little bit more the right side attack on the left side. So I think Pochettino is smart enough to be able to figure it out. I think he's going to make changes. The important thing is to have the right players around to make those decisions.
Okay. You know what I suggest? Let's take Prof's advice and let's ask Messi. What would you do? Lionel, tell us what to do.
Who do you want to defend?
He knows the answer.
I know he would too. That's the most frustrating part.
So the MLS season is back this weekend. It's going to be exciting to have you back on the airwaves. Obviously, Gio Savarese, analyst for MLS on Apple TV. And yeah, like I said earlier, no more season pass. You just get an Apple TV subscription to watch all the MLS matches this weekend.
I think they still give you like a year free if you buy like a piece of equipment. So all of you doing those Claude bots that are buying that game, you get a year free.
T-Mobile, Apple TV. So that's how
Call
I get
it. Call Gio
He got the plug. Gio Savarese, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us. And I mean, you're welcome back here anytime.
It's always my pleasure. I feel like I'm always
the best. Unfortunately, right now in football, if you get racially abused, you have to be the one to stop the game. Not the ref, not the federation, the victim. That's insane. And then Benfica come out and defend their own player after what happened between Vinicius and Prestiani. The system and the clubs are protecting the racists. This just seems like the wrong thing to ask the victim to be the one to have the responsibility to stop a match.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough situation in how do you even start the process, right? If the referee didn't hear it, then it has to be put on.
That part of the protocol is in, right? Where, like, the player, if you are racially abused, you go right to the ref. Vinny did that.
Yes.
But now the question gets asked to Vinny, do you want to stop the match? I mean, maybe Vinny, maybe some players have the confidence to say, absolutely. That's a lot of pressure to put on somebody also who is now going through the shock of just being racially abused.
Right. The coach, Alvaro Arbeloa, was saying that he was speaking to Vinicius, and Vinicius did say that he wanted the game to continue. But Vinicius is sadly a vet at this. He knows, he's dealt with it before.
Right.
He knows who to speak to. I'm sure he's read the rule quite thoroughly on, like, how the protocol is supposed to go. And the fact that, yeah, he went to the ref, and he just wants some sort of accountability, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's even the I think what's different about this situation is that people did hear it, right? We know, we'll talk about Prestiani a little bit, and saying he didn't say it, and Benfica defending him and the whole thing. But I think it's a strong statement from Mbappe as well, who said he heard it. He said he heard it 5 times. I'm like, you don't accidentally kind of misunderstand or mishear someone say, call somebody monkey 5 times.
But are you saying that the rule then, if more than one player hears it?
No. I'm just saying that this is one of the only times where we've had, like, so much evidence,
yeah,
where or witnesses or people coming up and being like, yes, the game needs to be stopped because of this reason. I also heard it, right? And the back and forth, I mean, I don't even understand what Benfica is sort of doing here when it comes to trying to defend this. Like, claiming that the players weren't close enough to hear what happened. I'm like, why are you even getting in? Like, you could be like, it's like defending your boy when you don't even know if they committed a crime yet, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's like, all right, it's cool that you're backing him, but, like,
don't compare it, because that I would do, right? But I wouldn't be like, saying, if somebody said my boy was racist, I wouldn't be like, no, he's not. I would be like, what the hell did you do, dog?
At least you look into it, right? Because by them putting out this public statement, they're already being like, nah, he's cool. He didn't do anything. And it's like, well, when after everything's investigated, you might also be held accountable, right?
Which they should be. And I think that's an extension of, like, the rule changes that should happen. If you back your player and you find that he did say something racist, you're also liable. You know what I mean? I think the first thing to do is assume the victim is not lying. I think that's a very clear thing to do first. Second thing I think we should do, a lot of players at the highest level, including Champions League, all wear, like, that sweat monitor, heart monitor, a tracking device. Sure. It looks like a sports bra, right? That thing. Put a microphone on it.
But all right, Alexis is saying, give all the players body cams.
Yo, no, audio VAR at this point, right? Mm. If somebody says, like, yo, he just said or made a racist remark or made a monkey sound or did this, go back and listen to it.
Well,
now you can't cover your mouth with your shirt. You know what I mean?
Look, I feel like you're sort of exaggerating a little bit.
No, I'm not.
No,
I'm
you're
being,
not. Okay.
I'm
well,
being...
there's a certain sense, I would imagine, of tactical sort of privacy that they don't want to have every single player mic'd up. But I understand why. The thing we're asking for is probably not a lot.
But there's microphones all over the pitch.
Yeah, but then it doesn't capture all of the sound that is happening on the field.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is like, wearing a microphone isn't going to suddenly change your tactics.
I would imagine it would if audio was, like, publicly available.
Well, I mean, I don't make it publicly available. Make it only available to, like, VAR.
Sure, whatever. I mean, look, I'd rather just have everyone not be racist than do that.
Well, sure. But where's the button to hit that, Christian? I think what we're talking about mainly is the fact that when you are racially abused, it's your responsibility to stop a match or not. I think that rule needs to be changed. Yeah, I think we could all sit here and talk about how abhorrent racism is. And in this situation, it's ridiculous that Benfica's backing, you know, their player when multiple players heard it. And you saw how Mbappe came to his defense during the match, came to Vinicius' defense during the match and in the postgame. I think that's wonderful. It shows a unity, especially with Real Madrid, a club that maybe is suffering from rumors of that being lacking. And maybe this is a moment where they sort of form more into a club than they were previously this season. In particular, if the rule is, all right, well, you tell me what you want to do. That's way too much pressure to put on a someone who was just racially abused.
It's true.
If someone just went through a concussion syndrome, you shouldn't be asking them, hey, do you want to stay in this game? A lot of times they're going to say, yeah, absolutely, because they feel that pressure of needing to provide for the team or needing to be there for their players. And in a big situation, especially Champions League, the bright lights, this is a big thing to say, stop this match. You feel the 70,000 people all of a sudden staring at you. They paid money. They took time out of the day to come see this event. Now, all of a sudden, you're the one saying, yeah, stop it, shut it down. It's a lot to ask of someone. So I think that rule needs to be changed.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if, I mean, the way you're sort of describing it is you're basically saying like that the player that makes the accusation is the one that is stopping the game or saying to stop the game, which I don't exactly... I feel like it's it's like more of a semantic thing. Like what the protocol should be: as soon as the accusation is made, then the game is stopped. Not are you sure you want to stop the game?
No,
I know. I'm just saying. Yeah, yeah. I'm just saying. Like
we're in agreement.
Yeah.
The rule should change.
The rule. I mean, I believe that is already the rule. It's about how it's implemented and enforced. I would imagine that the referee is also feeling some sense of pressure of uncertainty about stopping the game, right? This isn't necessarily a thing that happens.
I think if the referee hears it.
If the referee hears it, right?
Then but he
the
referee, can automatically stop
And the referee
it.
Said that he did not hear it.
Yeah.
So he's obviously basing it off of what Vinicius is saying. So the protocol, in my opinion, the protocol should be, if a player is coming to you saying this, then that's it, right? I mean, how much... We start investigating. The game is stopped, and now we start asking questions, trying to figure out kind of like how to continue or where to continue.
Right.
So
I think if every player is mic'd, as soon as somebody, even if you didn't hear it as a ref, take away the, you know, the privacy.
Yeah, I mean,
concerns. There's other concerns for microphones.
This is like just police state stuff.
But live in a world. Well, it's during a game. I'm not telling you to wear it on the way home.
I'm just saying. Yeah. I understand what you mean. But
so wear it during for 90 minutes. They're already wearing tracking. I mean, at this point, it's monitoring your heart and your sweat, and you're worried about your voice. There's microphones all over. There's cameras everywhere. I think it's a little ridiculous. But you wear a microphone during the game, right? It doesn't record you. They don't keep it forever. You know, it's not something that other teams can hear. Always saying for
like
you because
trusting
you're
Facebook
the only,
with your data.
You're really during the game. They're pros. This is stupid.
I'm just saying. But
I'm not saying players, strap an Alexa to your back.
I'm just saying that players say they insult each other. They say awful things to
who
each
cares?
Other.
Who cares? None of that is being monitored. The moment it becomes monitored, if I run to the ref and go, "Yeah, that guy just racially abused me or another player or something," the ref can go back and hear that part of it, or VAR can hear that part of it. And now there's the investigation. Two things can happen. One, it's proven, yo, they said something racist, you're out of the game. Two, people are saying, oh, if you say something racist happened and they stop the game, that could be used as an advantage. Okay, if you're lying about that, now you're in trouble. And that's it. We don't need Mourinho to come out and say something stupid after the game. We don't need Benfica doing that's not exactly what we heard. Oh, he said he called them, a gay slur, not a racist slur. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's better all of a sudden, right? We don't have that happening. Nothing happens. Now we all know for a fact what happened.
Okay,
at the end of the day, it just shouldn't be up to the point I'm trying to make is it shouldn't be up to the player to sit there and go, yeah, I don't want to keep playing. We should shut this down. That's too much pressure putting on a player, someone who's been racially abused.
I don't necessarily. You're talking about the pressure of this decision or making. I mean, then if it's too much pressure, then maybe there might be too much. There might be fear in making the accusation to begin, which I'm sure has existed. Several players. I mean, we saw Henri, we saw Michael Richards, we saw so many black players say that they've been racially abused, and they just kind of have to like deal with it or live with it or you know. But it's incredibly humiliating to be talk to you that way. And I understand the intention to be like, all right, let's monitor everybody so that we can just be certain about like what happened, which is it opens up Pandora's box of other issues. That's
it
my,
really does. I don't understand your point. It's ridiculous.
It clearly does. I mean, it's just there are. It's the reason players cover their mouths when they're talking about free kicks or whatever. It's a part of the game, love, not knowing what the people are saying to each other.
Do you think I'm suggesting to put it on speaker, everything they're saying?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that there is a tactical advantage to people not knowing what you're saying. So I could understand. I'm not saying that it's like inherently wrong to do that or like morally wrong. I'm just saying I would imagine as a player, from a player's perspective, I would imagine they don't want to be mic'd up. I would imagine coaches don't want their players to be mic'd up. And that's it. And that I'm just talking about from the perspective of just playing the game, not an ethical thing. Yeah, of course, it would be like nice to be certain to know if Presciani said what he said. But in my opinion, we would be certain of what he said if he got in a press conference and said, hey, I did not say that. Not just some tweet, not some oh, there was a misunderstanding. Okay.
You'd still believe him if he just said that?
At the very least, he's holding himself accountable. He could say, hey, I said something else. He misunderstood me. But Benfica's not trotting him out and making him do that. He's just being like, no, there was a misunderstanding. You know, this isn't right. It's like, well, if you are so certain that you did not say that, then stand 10 toes down being like, yo, I did not say that. But he is not doing that.
Yeah, I mean, I get that. And sure, that in a perfect world, the player comes out and defends themselves, and then we can figure out through investigation or whatnot. My point is simply, if the rule is going to put the pressure on the player who's just been racially abused, we should figure out another way. And maybe everyone wearing a microphone for privacy for 90 minutes is crazy.
But I mean, yeah, you say while you're at figure work. Out another way. I mean, the other way is, yeah, you're basically saying like, the player shouldn't even go to the ref by saying anything because it's already being monitored?
No, of course not. You listen to what I'm saying. If somebody says something racially and the ref hears it, he could shut the game down immediately.
Right.
If the ref doesn't hear it and a player goes to that ref and says, yo, I was just racially abused, immediately go to VAR and figure out what was said just to prove. Because the only reason I'm suggesting that is because the counterpoint to shutting the game down immediately when somebody says I've been victimized is people are saying, oh, well, then you can gain an advantage. You can stop a game where you're losing by lying about being racially abused. Now there's no question. There's no question about what Prestiani said. Immediately, yeah. Proof. And also, it holds clubs
I'm not
liable.
Worried about that. I'm not worried about a player lying about being racially abused.
Me neither.
I can't even.
Me neither.
Why would you?
Because but now there's infallible proof.
But you're describing the exact. There's so many reasons to not even make the accusation because there's so much pressure and you're going to deal with all this criticism. Or you might even be accused of lying for stopping the game or whatever. So there's plenty of reasons to not lie about that. So that's what I'm saying. To go to the degree of like, let's go mic everyone to protect from these concerns seems kind of like overkill and almost pointless. That's all I'm saying.
Okay, I guess we... But tell us in the comments what you think.
No, man, it's just it's absolutely awful. Everybody's just handling this so poorly. I mean, the comments from Mourinho make no sense. I mean, blaming him, Vinicius, for dancing. And it's like, it wasn't even a huge deal. He's just dancing. It wasn't even that, like, crazy. Look, Mourinho says when it happens in so many stadiums, always with the same, there is something wrong. Blaming Vinicius.
Well, no, if he would have been like, racism needs to be taken away, I'd be like, yes, yeah, something is wrong. But he didn't say that.
He says, I told Vinny, you scored a wonder goal. Why did you celebrate like that? Why can't you celebrate a goal with just happiness of being a great player? So what are you saying? That Prestiani, it makes sense that he would call him
that
a
is
monkey?
A, what was she wearing?
Yeah, it's like, it's what ridiculous. You, what is the point of making this statement? And it's like, well, it's just like who was the other person that was describing like other Portuguese, like black Portuguese, like Eusebio, and like I don't know who, I forgot who it was. Somebody was just
the history of the club.
Well, it's like they you
Luis
know,
Sao said you that Prestiani doesn't deserve to wear this shirt because the shirt there's a pride to wearing a Benfica shirt.
Yeah,
and play a club that has so much historically great black players. You can see it here. Given the distance, Real Madrid player could not have heard. I mean, this is ridiculous.
This is
the club
Benfica.
Itself,
yeah,
this yeah, is, the club itself is.
It's like this is where you just say you simply go. We're investigating and we're looking into it.
Yeah,
that's it. And it's like don't make any brash statement. This is from Prestiani himself. He tweeted, he said, quote, if they keep saying that supposedly I made a racist comment to Vinicius Jr., then why didn't any of them react? Accusing someone of something serious isn't right, and even less when it's not true. What do you mean they didn't react?
Yeah.
Vinicius.
And everyone is pointing fingers at me. This is a continuation. Everyone is pointing fingers at me for covering up with my shirt when they know that all soccer players cover their mouths to talk. Don't try to make up more.
So what did you say?
Yeah.
What? Just say what you said.
Give us the exact phrase of what you said.
That made him so upset. Just tell us what you said.
Yeah. The whole situation is ridiculous. The only thing I don't like is this idea that it's like, oh, well, if you can't prove I didn't say it, then nothing ever happened.
Right.
It's ridiculous. And it's to the point where, and the frustration I have with Mourinho for many reasons is this idea of like, well, if it keeps happening to you, it's like the problem is society being racist.
Right.
And if that's spilling into the game, which is ridiculous. I kind of love the way baseball handles this stuff. It's like, yo, you do something out of pocket. Guess what's going to happen to you the next time you come up to bat?
Yeah.
And I'm not a violent person. I'm not asking for violence. But yo, you got studs on the bottom of your shoe. Maybe it's time to handle it. You know what I'm saying?
Well, look, this is obviously going to be something, you know, Prestiani's going to deal with this at some point from someone. And
I sure hope so.
It's just like, look, if he did make this comment, right? And he called him a monkey. Bro, you have black players on your team. You think this is cool? Like, yeah. Similar to...
How's it going to be in training?
Similar to...
Also, how do those players feel about Benfica backing this guy?
It's not great.
Or right? Your coach.
I would imagine... And then on top, Benfica had a fantastic game. Like, this was a fantastic... I mean, well, 1-0 win to Real Madrid and obviously going back to Spain. Like, you have a real shot at winning this game. And for this to sort of, like, take up the whole story... it also reminds me of Enzo Fernandez, when after the World Cup, he's singing the song, making fun of the French national team, the black players on the French national team, and he goes back to Chelsea, and well, he has to address that video to his teammates. He had to apologize. He had to do a whole thing. Like, however you feel about Enzo, he had to address the fact that the song he was singing had. Was, you know, either racist or had racist undertones or whatever.
Yeah.
And he had to address it with his team. Prestiani, I would imagine his teammates are like, yo, what happened? What'd you say? Yeah. What'd you say?
And talk to me real quick. Yeah.
So it's that's what kind of bugs me so much, especially from the fact that it's another player would try to get under a black player's skin in that way. And then, you know, you go back to Argentinians and blah blah blah, and it brings up
especially their history with Brazilians. Why you ever ask yourself why Brazil has all the black people and not Argentina? There's a reason for that.
I don't necessarily want to paint with this broad brush about Argentinians, but this is just not great. And how old is Prestiani anyway? He's young.
20, 23, 24?
He's a kid, man. Yeah. And it's like, bro, you I don't know what you grew up around or where you learned this
now
from.
Your whole history, your whole career is gonna have this stink on it.
And then there's a he's 20 years old.
20.
And there's a little bit of how
you can't even order a drink in
Vinicius
the country.
Vinicius is like, what, 28, 29, 30 or something like that? Yo, show respect to a dude that almost won a Ballon d'Or. 25. 25 years old. Show some respect.
I don't even care about that.
Whether
you're good or not, I think just...
It's not even...
How about this? I don't care how annoying a player is. And you know, if I played against Vinny, I'd be like, man, this guy's getting on my skin. He's taunting. He's picking at me. He's dancing the whole night. I'd be annoyed. The last thing I go to is the color of that player's skin. It just doesn't make... There's so many other things you can say about Vinny.
There's a billion other insults.
There's so many. You can make fun of him for the fact that he set up parties about the Ballon d'Or and didn't win.
That's a better roast.
What did Otamendi do? He lifted his shirt and he showed him the World Cup tattoo.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good roast, papa.
I mean, he could learn a thing or two, bro. But not embarrassing, man. This is just, we'll see, UEFA's supposed to be investigating. FIFA's supposed to be investigating. Hopefully, I mean, Benfica's not going to investigate anything.
No. Well, all those, everyone you mentioned is always keeping, upholding everyone.
The one thing,
integrity
I was kind of mentioning before about Mbappe. And I think that is the fact that there were other people who heard it. And Mbappe was in his post match post-match interview, he was just like,
yeah, he said it all.
He was just like, I'm not even gonna say his name. He doesn't deserve for me to say his name.
Fair.
And then there's also the clip of Mbappe yelling at him on the pitch, calling him a racist to his face. He said it four times. So that's like, bro, it's like there's witnesses. There's obviously a lot of people coming to the defense, but the fact that there's another person that can corroborate what Vinicius heard, I think that kind of just says enough. So and Mbappe, you know, speaking like that so publicly, I think is what is, especially because it's Mbappe, there's a bit of a more pressure on FIFA and UEFA to actually come down with
hopefully some sort of punishment because this
is absolutely absurd. Okay.
If you think you had a bad day, just look at Juventus. They lost 5-2 to Galatasaray. But while Europe seems to be burning, Valerian Balogun out of nowhere might have just solidified his starting spot with the U.S. Men's National Team. Christian, yes, they lost, but scoring two beautiful goals against PSG. Valerian Balogun, man, he's looking like a worldie right now.
And that's all I care about. Monaco.
Don't even tell me the final score, baby.
I don't really care for Monaco and Jim Radcliffe's home.
Yeah.
But Balogun. And we were talking about this when we were previewing Champions League, how we were looking to how Balogun would do. And it's a great showing, obviously, for coming into a World Cup. This is how you want him to be playing, scoring against the better teams.
A brace with three shots on target is crazy.
He scores in the first minute with the header. But then the second goal I thought was fantastic. I watch the goal and I'm like, man, is there anybody else in the national team, the U.S. national team, that would do what he just did? Which is, I mean, the 1-2 and then holding off the defender and then just sliding the ball in perfectly. And it's like, man, I can't really think of anybody that has those sets of skills to be able to score that goal. It felt like a prime kind of Balogun goal for sure.
For me, the conversation becomes, okay, it's Pepe versus Balogun, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I know Pepe, obviously, right, can't do this. But all we're asking is in the moments where you get to shine, show me something, right? Show me that you've progressed. Show me that you've developed more.
Yeah.
Show me that you want it. Now, you can't situate the defense, right? You can't tell the back line what to do. As a striker, all you can do is make the most of your opportunities. Two goals versus the Champions League champion of last season. Two goals with three shots on target tells me almost everything I need to hear. Now, can you keep that form going, right?
Yeah.
Can you bring that form with you to the World Cup? There's a lot of questions I have, but if the battle between who's the current number one is who's better and who's in form at the moment, Balogun is showing you that he's not just in the form we've known him as. He's now up the level. He's scoring against bigger clubs, bigger opportunities with the brighter lights, with all the additional pressure. For me, that's just telling me, damn, yo, he's probably the number one.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't think there's too much of an argument there. He had a great game. I mean, he had, it's unfortunate that they lost. They got the red card to Golovin, I believe, got the red. Honestly, Dembele leaving the game and I don't know what the hell happened to Desiree Doué.
Yeah.
Apparently, in the game prior, Dembele was sort of calling out his teammates saying that we need to play for PSG and not for ourselves. Apparently, that was directed at Desiree Doué. My man took it personally.
Yeah. When you make eye contact with someone, but you say we, you know what I mean? In a royal right. We, I kind of know what you're talking about.
So, and first, touches of the game, he scores a goal and then gets the second goal later in the game. It was a little bit of a shadow on the team. I mean, you look at possession for Monaco had 20% possession to PSG's 80.
Which is the other point I was going to bring up, right? Like, Pochettino wants to supposedly, right? It seems like all evidence points to Pochettino wanting to play three at the back.
Yeah.
Right? Which a lot of people think is very defensive, right? And if that's the case, then we are going to be playing on the counter. There's no better striker in our system to play on a counter than Valerian Balogun.
Yeah, he's just one of those guys. But he's rarely ever, especially with the U.S., he's rarely in any counterattacking kind of situation.
But if we play three at the back, he might be more. Sure. I'd like to believe that we're not. We're going to be playing a bit more progressive, and it's just defending with three. You know, we're talking about overloading the midfield with those other players, right? So Flair and Balogun also is one of the best players that's sort of being like that. I don't want to call him a fox in the box, which is more of like a poacher, but he's hard to sort of keep track of in the box. He's better at link up. He's going to put our midfielders in better positions. I'm not saying over everyone else. He's just one of those players that shines in those situations. So if we play three at the back, it might be. If we're playing a 3-5-2, then maybe you can have two strikers up front and you can have the conversation of whether that's, you know, Christian Pulisic and he slides back a little bit, whether that's Ricardo Pepi and you're playing both strikers at the same time. We've tried it before. It wasn't great. So I don't know if he's going to go back to that. Maybe if you listen to Spalletti, it's Weston McKennie, who's apparently the perfect central striker. Whoever he's linked up with, he can do both of those. He can play the transition and he can play the sort of, you know, set up everyone in the box game. I'm kind of comfortable now thinking of him as like the prime number one, and it's his position to lose.
I've been comfortable for months.
Damn. This was just exhibit Z.
I was just happy to that he scored those goals to build his confidence going into the World Cup. But I don't think there's much of a doubt here.
What does Haji Wright have to do?
And that's the thing. Haji Wright just got a hat trick the other day. Seemingly.
Coventry are like. They're looking good in the championship.
No, but for Balogun to do this at the Champions League level, Haji Wright is great too, but he's doing it in the championship, and it is what it is.
And we hope he gets promoted. We hope they get promoted and he stays on it.
It's looking like that's going to happen.
Lampard is doing a good job as a manager there, right?
Wrexham has something to say. Wrexham might be in Premier League next year.
By the way, they're in sixth. It's crazy. Yeah. I did say they'd get promoted immediately. So
you did say that? We'll see. They look like they'll be in the playoffs at the very least. Okay.
Some of y'all was talking greasy that they wouldn't even be in this position.
So let's look at the other game. I just want to talk about Juve. Juve loses to Galatasaray, who we in our predictions we said this is gonna be
ain't gonna happen.
It's gonna be a piece of cake for Juve. Yeah.
Juve, baby, this is why you show up, Juve.
you just all you gotta do is go to work. Yeah. But it's not even a big deal. That they lose 5-2. Yeah. In the game, who was the defender that got Cambiaso? Andrea Cambiaso getting a yellow card early in the first half, and then I think he kind of swung. He was defending. He kind of swung at the face of the player. I forgot who it was, but ref didn't give a second yellow. Everybody got kind of nervous, and subbed him at halftime, which is the right move for sure. But when he gets subbed off. The midfielder Juan Cabal comes in, Colombiano, playing his position. So Juan Cabal comes in for Cambiaso and gets two yellow cards and gets sent off. So when you are the sub that is only playing one half and you got subbed for the guy who they were worried about getting red carded,
and then you go out, you go and you're like, oh, is this what you're worried about? What I just did right here?
Oh, my bad.
Yeah, oops.
So as soon as that happened, I mean, it was kind of over. Even when it was when Juve were winning the game 2-1, it still felt like, oh, I don't even know. Maybe it ends in a draw, but they were not kind of dominating or overpowering Galatasaray, even with 11 men on the pitch. So, this was Galatasaray were fantastic. They played a really, really strong game. I thought McKennie, this was weird. He played the false nine in this game.
Spalletti says, oh, he's the perfect guy.
This is one of the ones where I'm like, I don't think he needs to do this.
Right.
Because, I mean, did he play the false nine because who was on the bench that they must have injuries, right? There's no reason why. Yeah, Vlahovic is injured. Sure. Jonathan Davis
is
injured.
But if your coach says you might be the perfect central striker, here's some examples of maybe why not.
He got an assist, which was a great ball that he sent to Coop Miners, I believe. So it was looking great early on, but then later in the game, it's just like, man, this dude belongs in the midfield. He should not be so far ahead. Like, not. I mean, they don't have the defensive presence that they can't replace that defensive presence from Weston McKennie with anybody else. I
This is where I think his versatility goes against him, because you can play him at the striker position.
Yeah.
Sure, he's an athlete. He can do that. He's a good footballer. But he's so much better in that midfield where he's able to sort of play both at the same time.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, late runs in the box is kind of, that's his thing. But, you know, compared to Thuram, Locatelli, and Koop Miners in the midfield, I would want McKennie in there to kind of clean up a lot of messes. And there were moments during counters that I'm like, whoa, why is Weston all the way? I mean, he's up front waiting for the ball, waiting for something to happen. It's like, he don't belong there. I mean, that with all due respect, I understand.
You don't even go here, dog. I want to talk about Bodo Glimt real quick, because they beat, they obviously beat Inter 3-1.
Yeah, another one where we did not get the prediction correct.
I was trying to watch the Arsenal game. No reason to watch that. That was horrific. It didn't count. It didn't happen. But if you look here, I mean, this is insane. We're talking about Inter. I gave Bodo Glimt no shot, but I did say, yo, Bodo Glimt do play strong when it comes to Champions League. I didn't think they were going to play this way. I mean, look, If you look at the possession, they had a lot of possession, but they weren't trying to have it. Sure. They were comfortable sitting back and springing the attack. But you saw the XG. Inter had chances, but Bodo Glimt just made the most out of it. They had a guy named, what's his name, like Blomberg or something like that. This dude, especially on the counter, oh my God, dude, they reminded me of like the old, some people are going to be offended by this, but they reminded me of like 2018 Atlanta United. Remember, like, as soon as they got possession of the ball, it just seemed like, everyone, including the goalkeeper, suddenly everyone is like up in the tank.
Comments like, going crazy right now. Yeah. How dare you compare a Champions League club to an MLS team?
I just mean
team.
Tactically, as soon as possession, it's like everyone just run as hard as you can.
Sure.
And get in open position. And that's exactly what they were doing. They were so lethal.
They know what
the
they're
counter.
Good at. They know what they're good at. And they didn't pretend to be something that they weren't. So.
Also, what's the name of the stadium? What's the name of the stadium, bro? Because I know if it was Young Boys play at the Wank Dorf, which is hilarious. This is the Aspimira Stadion.
Yeah.
Yeah, dog. That is on the list, man. I'm going to Norway. I need to go to this stadium. It's something like 18,000. They usually have the...
is that even enough to...
capacity, 8,270. Yo, this thing is incredible. The vibe in this stadium, it's tiny, old
That's
school.
That's it?
Dude, hey, yo.
They're allowed to host a Champions League.
How are you playing this good when only less than 10,000 people show up to see you? That's crazy.
Did like Union Berlin have to play their games somewhere else? Because
they didn't have to. They wanted to.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And by the way, they sold out the stairs, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
of the Olympic Stadium, or Hertha Berlin Stadium, which I believe is the Olympic Stadium. So, yo, shouts to Bodo Glimt, bro. You guys get a round of applause for me. Can you do it at San Siro? I don't know. You're like, yo, there's a lot of people.
This is more than I'm used to.
Can we go 1/10? This is what I'm more comfortable with. But the stadium looks dope. I need to go to a Bodo Glimt game, dog. It doesn't even need to be Champions League, dog.
I mean, get me a ticket to Bodo or Glimt. I'll go to either.
okay. I was like, there's another one?
Yeah. So, all right. Yeah, I mean, and the other one, I just want to give a shout out, Club Bruges, who I did say would possibly provide a bit of an upset against Atletico Madrid. They got they were down 2-0, and the game ended 3-3 against Atletico. Another
Club Bruges.
Kind of a big shock there.
So, once again, because you forgot what we said, we're 100% correct on everything
we
said.
Yeah,
we
nailed
bro.
It. Don't watch Dude. Previous episodes.
10 out of 10, even if there was only 8. You know what I mean? We deleted the old episode.
No, we had AI fix
Actually,
it.
Benfica said we said that. Benfica said we were 100% right.
I don't know. We weren't even there.
Yeah, we weren't even there, dog. No? They said, don't worry about it. I'm backing them. They were 100% right.
Shout out. My club, desde la cuna, right? all right, everybody. Thank you again for tuning in to another episode of The Cooligans. We always appreciate it. Big thank you to Gio Savarese.
Oh, my God. What an incredible interview.
Who crushed it, per usual. He is our Venezuelan dad.
100%.
Which is always great.
When he looks me in the eyes, he makes me want to be a better person. And I can't tell you how much I hate that.
It's like, who gave you this power?
Yeah, I don't like this, dude. Why are you judging me, bro?
So thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Make sure you follow us everywhere at Soccer Cooligans, wherever your social media, whatever preferred social media platform. I hit like and subscribe on YouTube if you have not yet. All right. We'll see you next week. Arsenal loses again.
Great. We'll can't see. Wait for Everton to get relegated.
Never, baby. We unrelegatable.
At the hilly dick.
So take care, everybody.